Good evening. Hello, Sue.
Hi, it's just you and I. And oh, I know we've got our guests in the studio.
We have got great guests today.
Yeah, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, welcome to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM, radioreverb.com. How have you been, Sue?
Oh, busy. I love being busy.
You're a busy, busy bee.
Yeah, a busy, busy someone.
A busy
yeah,
bee.
I know.
What have you been up to?
Oh, my goodness. Apart from all the work we've been doing at the, you know, Positive Voices Town and Seek and Trust, what a week last week it was with HIV testing week. Oh, my goodness. Did you see it all happening on social?
I know that. It's just
on the television.
Yeah, so the Prime Minister...
The Prime Minister, the listeners know, it's the first time in history this has happened where a British Prime Minister has taken a HIV test and been filmed and put on national television. And the great thing is, Josh, obviously the Town and Seek and Trust worked really well to get that to happen, because that didn't just happen overnight.
No, I think it's brilliant.
Dear sir, can you go on television and do a HIV test? Oh, no, no, no. So, you know, I'm really proud of the fact that in all communities, all the HIV sector work together. And the great thing is, you know, our Prime Minister is really in tune with what's going on, and he's on board, and that's all we can hope and pray for.
Well, if you look across the pond, obviously...
I know.
It just makes you feel good that we're in a that kind of place, that somebody takes...
I don't know about you, but I mean, it's always been fairly active over National HIV Testing Week,
yes.
But I don't know what it was this last week. It just seemed more robust than other HIV testing weeks, because loads of stuff we're getting. I believe it's because, you know, we're 25 year, you know, 2030, we've got the, you know, if we want to be on track or stay on track, we've got the 5 years. So everything has been thrown at getting tested, get on medication, can't pass it on. So, but yeah, I was really proud of, you know, what we all achieved as a HIV sector and what happened last week.
Yeah, and there's more, I mean, I'm going to do a story.
Yeah.
There's more HIV testing in NEs.
Oh, my goodness.
So we'll touch on that later.
Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, it's great. It's really good, isn't it?
Mm.
So what have we got on the show, Sue?
Oh, I don't know. We've got some exciting. We've got an interview with Jonathan Blake and Simon Madrell, which is going to be...
Is that right, Simon?
He's going to tell me in a minute, Sue, you've said that wrong. That's fine. I don't mind being corrected. But no, really looking forward to that. And we've got the second part of Philip's interview with Dan Harry.
Yeah, I'll just say, actually, the first part we played in November.
We did.
It's a bit of a gap, but we had other things going on, obviously. But this is the second part of Philip's interview with Dan. Dan was known for his hit TV show I Kissed a Boy. So if you do want to listen to the first part of it was in November, so you can always go to our Listen Again page on radioreverb.com or go to Audio Boom and put in the November the 21st, I think it is, and that's the first part of this interview. So this is going to be the second part.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, fabulous. And yeah, we've got some great music, haven't we? So
of course.
Shall we get on with the show?
Get on.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Okay, welcome back to the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. You can get us on email at info@hivhour.org. Our website is hivhour.org.uk, and we're sponsored by the fabulous Jack Russell Technologies.
Yes, thank you so much for that. So in the studio we've got two amazing people who are HIV advocates. I'm going to introduce first Simon Madrell. Why is that so hard to say? Madrell, sorry, Simon. Simon Madrell is the author of six pamphlets, including A Finger in Derek Jarman's Mouth, Isle of Sin, and joint winner of the Rialto Open Pamphlet Competition 2020. He's also been on the show a couple of times, actually, which was brilliant. So welcome, Simon.
Lovely. Thank you, Josh. And I'm here with the amazing Jonathan Blake. It's going to be a bit of a, what I think the kids call meta, which is, we're going to talk about the book Patient L1, which is written in your voice, Jonathan, but it was written by me.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm going to ask you about a book that's in your voice, but I wrote it, which is all a bit weird. So we'll perhaps start a bit weird, and I'll read the preface of the book. I want to tell you about my friend, a man called Jonathan Blake, who was born in Birmingham on the 21st of July 1949. He shared more than half of his life, nearly 39 years, with Nigel Young. Jonathan has lived with HIV for even longer than he lived with Nigel, having been diagnosed in 1982. This was so early in the UK epidemic that Jonathan was named Patient L1 at London Middlesex Hospital. I first met Jonathan 2 weeks before his 70th birthday in 2019, and we've been recording dozens of our conversations ever since. He kindly agreed to let me write his story as verse memoir in his voice. There are enough tales to fill several books, but here Jonathan is going to tell you just a few. So Jonathan, read us the prologue.
Prologue. Recollections may vary. As this is memoir, expect words like Jonathan Blake, née Goodman, 1949. Expect sex. A lot of you think of nothing else. But bottom. Dom is only half of it. Expect drama school, synagogue, cottages, stages. As this is memoir, expect prep school. Expect smells like magnolia, vanilla, lemon drizzle cake, sweat, charcoal burnt, of course, twisted hazel, climbing hydrangea, Nigel, the other half. Half of it. As this is memoir, expect Mother Goose, traipsing the lawns in tragic togas. Expect Rose Bruford's knickers. Tybalt slain by Romeo from a far country. Maths, woodwork, cricket, useless bats. The gardener, the caretaker. As this is memoir, recollections may vary. The guilty or innocent beyond doubt, the innocent guilty. Joe, Joff, Johnny, Jonty, to name the usual suspects. Yellow, red, pink, triangles, upturned, act up, facing down, A, Z, T, fingers, D, D, I, toes. As this is memoir, I'll walk like a gorilla, sleep like a corpse, expect death, and you'll get it soon enough. I'll be patient L1, patient L2 is dead. HIV, AIDS, it does that. As this is memoir, I'll schmeiss. I'll sect with strangers who turn out to be frauds. Some have drugs, others don't turn up. For all that, I'll live a lot longer than you think.
So what's it like reading snippets of your life out like that?
It's actually wonderful. But it's very strange. I kind of feel a bit naked. But, yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary.
Good. I mean, obviously, it's a life of living with HIV. But Neil Bartlett, who's helped me a lot with the book, he said, bugger that, it's actually all about, it's a love story. Yeah. I mean, what do you think?
I mean, I think it is a love story. I mean, that is what is so extraordinary. I was incredibly fortunate. You know, I was diagnosed so early in this. And yeah, my patient number was L1. It actually, I always used to think it stood for London 1, but actually it stands for lymphadenopathy 1, which was the thing that they did. They biopsied one of my lymph nodes. And so that's actually where the L comes from. But who cares, you know? I was the first at the Middlesex Hospital.
You mentioned lucky, because one of the big conversations about HIV is the idea of survivor's guilt. And for me, I don't notice you as having any. What do you think about that?
I did. You know, very early on, I certainly did. But my way of dealing with it was actually not dealing with it, keeping myself so busy that there was nothing else to think about. I didn't think about, you know, the virus. I went and I did all kinds of things. I was very fortunate, you know, on the 1st of April 1983, I met Nigel Young, and that completely changed my life. I mean, he actually gave me a life. I don't know what would have happened had I not met him. You know, that's another country. But I did meet him. And really, as soon as we met, just everything changed. And that's why I say that I've been so fortunate. And yeah, early on, I did. You know, there was, of course, and there is still occasionally the survivor's guilt. But, you know, it means nothing. You know, it's not going to be helpful. And for me, the most important thing is to just get on and deal with it. And I've been really fortunate in terms that I've had all these amazing adventures, like joining Lesbian and Gay Men Support the Minors, going down to South Wales. And I used to talk about my status, because it was part of me. It was me, you know. And I very rarely got rebuffed. And that's what is so extraordinary. I mean, I remember when the Terence Higgins Trust, I was the first person on their campaign, which they did back in 1996. And I remember sort of going down to Clapham tube station, and it was one of these island platforms, and there were three huge, I don't know what you call it, but huge posters of me on the southbound line and three huge ones on the northbound line. And I just thought, there is one too many Jonathan Blakes on this station, and I fled. And I thought, this is really going to sort of to be a problem. I went to the steam baths, because I go to the steam baths often, and somebody said, oh, I saw your picture on the bus. It's fabulous. And that was that, you know, nothing. So I never got any kind of sort of antagonism from it.
I mean, one of the things for me that's been so joyous in writing the book is that you embrace your look, if you like. I mean, that's why I say, for me, the time I've known you, I've not noticed a guilt. What I see is the life and the energy that you have, and the good fortune that you feel that you have for your life, and hopefully the book will reflect that.
I think it does. I mean, and it is extraordinary, kind of sort of having, well, being a muse for a poet. I mean, wow, you know, not many people get that, you know.
I mean, some people said to me, why did you come up with this idea of writing it as poetry? And actually, you know, the truth of the matter is that in the beginning, it was the thing that I could do. So there was no other way I was going to be able to write it other than in poetry.
Yeah, but you're a poet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But in hindsight, it's bloody genius.
I have to agree with you.
I don't know if I've told you this before, but I talked to your brother, and you'll be able to guess which one. And he said that HIV was the making of you. Do you agree?
Wow. Gosh. I think it probably was, actually. You know, theatre had given me up. It had spewed me out. And so actually, you know, when Patrick Cash, first of all, invited me to do an HIV conversation, which I loved the idea of that, because I think it's really important to talk about HIV, to kind of try and just normalise it, because there was so much misinformation. So I did that, and I loved doing it. It was really great. And at the end of it, I remember someone saying, good heavens, I had forgotten about the Concord trial, which was the trial where they trialled AZT. But after that, I think it must have been about 12 months after that, Pat sent me an email, and he said, oh, I've written a new set of monologues, and I've written one that's based on your story. Would you like to read it? And I went, yeah, of course I'd love to read it. And so we did rehearsed readings. And then he said, well, we want to do performances. And I said, oh, I can do that. I've been an actor. And suddenly that brought me back into theatre. And that was amazing. I mean, that's where I say I have just been so fortunate, so spoiled, that I've had these opportunities. And yeah, I've embraced them.
And actually, the HIV monologues is where I came to the second performance, I think it was at the Shoreditch, the Ace Hotel in Shoreditch. Mm-hmm. And that's where I saw you, and I thought, this man's story needs to be told. And afterwards, I sort of connected you to the other Jonathan Blake in Pride. But it's quite funny, I was looking at the dates, and I did all of this research into you. It took me 2 years to have the courage to contact you, and because I knew Pat from Spoken Word London.
Of course.
He gave me your email address, and that's when we had our first meeting in your garden.
Yeah, God. It is extraordinary, just all these connections that fly around. So as I say, I mean, I have just been really, really fortunate, you know. And I don't know why or how, but I ain't fighting it.
What would you say to persuade someone to read Patient Hill 1?
There's a difficult question. I think that what Patient L1 does, it actually shows that it is possible to have a life along with HIV. And I just think that it is so important that HIV is just normalised. It is difficult, but actually, to be honest, having HIV with all the medications that we have is actually, I think, less difficult than someone living with diabetes 1. Because what diabetes 1 does to people, you know, can be horrendous. And that every day they have to inject. I mean, we take pills. Yeah, but you get used to taking the pills.
I mean, for someone who was only diagnosed in 2013... It's me, well, and contracted it then as well. I find your story inspiring as well, because obviously you've got that. We've got that thing of the long, 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 long term survivor, but the way that you embrace living with HIV, you know, even for someone who's recently diagnosed and therefore not had all of those horrors, mm-hmm. I find your story inspiring, which of course is why I wanted it to be told, but. You know, I think that for me would be the message to people. This isn't just about understanding long-term survival. It's understanding, embracing living with HIV.
Oh, God, thank you. God, you choked me with that one. Thank you. I think if that's what it does, then great, because I'm happy to hear that. That's it slightly floored me.
Well, let's end with we started with the first poem in the book. Let's end with the last one, which I know is positioned in your garden again, for your 75th birthday, which was last year.
35 years later. I told you from the beginning I'd live a lot longer than you think. Looking at a cracked mirror image of my 40th birthday in our co-op garden, LGSM Mike, the Eno3, the Magnolia, Michael and Vic, Paulette sits under the twisted hazel. My 40th birthday present, the cherub bird bath, remains balanced thanks to a crock from a broken pot. Though everything else around it has changed. Brother Dick arrives. How far has he come? Missing are Nigel's open face and open-necked Fiji Paradise Pacific shirt. Exotic like Vic's burnt bass cheesecake. Light as air, rich as sky.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
I think your life has just been one love story, Jonathan. No, and I mean that sincerely. Your whole life of resilience, and you know what you're still doing now.
Yeah, so that's the last poem in the book. So we've got a number of launch events coming up, and particularly we've chosen not just sort of the traditional poetry events where I'm doing a reading, darling. We've got two performances, haven't we? Both at Lunch Positive and Positive East in Stepney. Do you want to tell me about that?
Well, I'm really looking forward to I'm looking forward to them both. I think it's great that we're launching at Lunch Positive here in Brighton, because that's your hometown now. And then Positive East. And Positive East is, you know, this wonderful drop-in centre, which to me is particularly wonderful because its building is a former bathhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love bathhouses, you know. So, you know, for me, I feel sort of, you know, it's like coming home. But it's I'm really looking forward to sharing, you know, these poems. And
those you're going to be reading them, aren't you?
I'm going to be reading them. And also what you have done is you have written some poems.
It's a surprise.
Oh, well, in that case...
We've got a surprise in
the
middle. We
have a surprise. A surprise.
Is there a website or an email or something that people can get in contact with or check it out?
On social media, I'm at Simon Madrill, one word.
Yes.
MADRELL.
Okay.
And you can find Jonathan there. You can find a link in bio to all of the events.
Brilliant.
There's an online launch on Monday the 24th as well.
Right.
Which will be another meta thing, because we're going to be doing the readings the other way around. We've got sort of that mix of a traditional sort of book launch to what this evening is going to be. Like a bit of a show, really.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, so I'll just tell to our listeners that this has been recorded on the Wednesday, so that's when the Lunch Positive thing was. Sue?
The question I want to ask you, Jonathan, is will you still love me tomorrow? But that is the song by the Shirelles.
Yeah, that was the very first record that I ever bought, which is, I mean, what I find is so extraordinary is that I never knew that it was written by Carole King, and I love Carole King.
It's a good song, isn't it?
It is such a good song, but the Shirelles, they just, I don't know, there is something about that it used to break my heart. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, back then, I knew that I was other. Mm-hmm. I knew I was queer, mm-hmm. and I knew that it was just not acceptable. Mm-hmm. So I was carrying this burden.
Yeah.
But this song... just, it kind of went straight to my heart.
It's the mark.
Yes.
So, thank you both for coming
on
the show.
It was
so nice,
much.
So good to listen to that, and really good luck with the next events and the book and that. So, and we'll get you back on. Hopefully, if you'd like to come back on, it'd be great.
Of course.
Yes.
So, always.
Yes. Thank you so much. This is the Shirelles, and Will You Love Me Tomorrow?
Radio Reverb. Radio Reverb.
Welcome back to the HIV Hour, and a huge welcome back to activist and ally Dan Harry. Now, the last time we spoke, you were lacing up your trainers for the Red Run. Now, this wasn't the first time you've raised money for the Terence Higgins Trust, and we spoke about this before, where you raised money for the Big Shave Off. But as well as your activism and charity work, you've actually taken part in the vaccine trial. So I'm really interested to hear more about this and how you got involved and exactly what was involved.
Hey Phil, nice to see you again. So the vaccine trial was, you know, it sort of became this much bigger thing than what I actually initially realized. So the reason why I got involved is because I have a friend who was involved in the PrEP trials. So they'd been going to a doctor and basically been taking part in this research trial for PrEP to become available en masse. So he then told me about this other trial, which was they were taking applications for, which was for a HIV vaccine. And I was like immediately extremely interested in being involved in that, because it's just something that I've always felt really passionately about for all the reasons that I'm sure people are aware of now. I basically applied to take part, and I actually applied to take part like a good 6 months before I even did like I Kissed the Boy or anything. Like, this was a something that I initially got involved in a long, long time ago. But it takes months for these things to happen. So probably about 8 months later, by this point, I Kissed the Boy was now out and on TV. I then got a message to say that they were now taking applications and for me to come in and do a test to see if I was eligible to take part in the research trial. So I came in and was basically brought onto this research trial. There was only 5 people on the research trial, And from that point onwards, for a year, I was in and out of the St. Stephen's Centre and Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, doing appointments, tests, giving so much blood, like a lot of blood, being given this trial vaccine, which never had been tested on human beings before until now, essentially becoming like a guinea pig in a trial for a HIV vaccine. And over the course of a year, I had like so many appointments and was given 3 doses in each arm of this HIV vaccine, essentially to test if it was something that would work and would be able to be given out en masse. Since then, I've now completed the vaccine trial, so that's now finished. But in terms of whether or not it's worked, we don't know yet, because it takes another year after for them to continue doing tests, because every time I'd go to an appointment, they would take a lot of my blood, which, by the way, absolutely did it freak me out so much. And now there's like someone in a lab somewhere with like gallons of my blood, like doing all of these various tests. And essentially what they were doing is they'll have my blood before I was given a vaccine, my blood after I was given one vaccine, my blood after I was given 2 vaccines, and my blood after I was given 3. And they'll be testing each version of my blood to see how it's evolved. Essentially what the vaccine was doing was creating like a genetically engineered replica of the HIV virus in my blood to essentially mimic the notion that I am actually already living with HIV. So it essentially creates a positive status. But obviously you're not actually positive. It's just your body thinks it is, which protects you from then becoming actually positive. So a way that like my life's changed since doing the vaccine is there's now only one hospital, which annoyingly is on the other side of London, which is where I go to get an actual HIV test, because if I was to go to any other hospitals, the reading of my results may not potentially be accurate, because they would not necessarily know all the context of the trial that I've done.
That is incredible. Like, and it blows my mind. Like, I mean, obviously if someone living with HIV, it blows my mind anyway that we even have PrEP and effective medication to make you undetectable. Like, how the science behind it is unbelievable. But yeah, so just to kind of examine that a bit closer, you're not actually given the HIV vaccine. It's never put into your body. It's replica of it.
No, and actually, like, I'm so glad you asked me that question, because that is like probably the most common question that I get with this. Probably the biggest misconception about me taking part in this trial. At no point have I ever been given the HIV virus. There's no HIV virus in my body, and that's not how this vaccine works. It's a genetically engineered replica. So it's made to look and act like HIV in your body, and to essentially protect you from the actual real HIV. And again, like, I get, like, that's just something that, interestingly, I've just, like, people always, like, I actually get such funny questions with this. There's a lot of misconceptions around it. So yeah, that's the case. It's not that. The reason why, like, I feel so passionate about it is because all of the team who work on that vaccine trial have all been working in the HIV field literally for like 30, 40 years. And actually, the place where I was taking part in the trial is actually where Freddie Mercury went for his treatment. So there was even nurses and doctors who worked with Freddie, who I met, and that was like so cool as well. And I actually became super close with all the nurses and doctors. Like, I still like text them all the time, and like I pop in to see them, because it just became like a little, like, I would just go in, have a chat with them. They would like give me lots of snacks to get me through the blood. Yeah, it was great. Like, I actually really enjoyed it. I kind of miss that I don't have those appointments anymore. But yeah, the science of it is really incredible. Like, people also ask me, like, were you not scared to take part in a trial like that? And like, weirdly, not. Like, I never was scared. I think I've always just had trust and faith in the science and in the doctors who are like doing this. Because people are like, oh, well, how do you feel about the fact that you're going to have like a positive status whenever you do a test? And I'm kind of like, again, like, if that's one of the side effects, then I think like it is what it is. I'd still rather be a part of this, like, what could be potentially extremely groundbreaking thing.
And yeah, just to kind of clarify what your measures are to actually protect yourself from actually contracting HIV, does this vaccine actually is it protecting you at the moment, or are you still having to take PrEP to protect yourself?
Yeah, the thing with the vaccine is, like, it's at such an early test stage that, like, it by no means is it should it be used as a form of, like, prevention from HIV. So, like, I've always continued taking PrEP, and I've always been encouraged to continue taking PrEP. In fact, it became even more important than ever for me to be taking PrEP, because it would have been a real problem for the trial if I somehow became HIV positive during the trial, because it would totally mess up the trial, right? It just wouldn't work. So actually, they would give me a great supply of PrEP. I never had to worry about that. And I still now, I continue to take PrEP all the time, every day.
This leads us on nicely to the documentary you made for BBC iPlayer, which was then broadcast on BBC as well, wasn't it? So it's HIV, PrEP and Me. Tell us a little bit more about this.
So after doing all the HIV vaccine stuff, I sort of, like you say, like, became like a poster boy within the community, and was very lucky to be given the opportunity to sort of, like, be the face of this BBC Three, BBC iPlayer documentary called HIV, PrEP and Me, which was essentially all about HIV prevention and PrEP, which I'm sure anyone who's listening to this will know exactly what PrEP is, but there's so many people out there in the world who have no idea what PrEP is and have, like, never heard of it. And I think that was, like, something I really learned from doing the doc. And actually, like, I mean, Phil, you knew whenever I was, like, making it and putting it together, because you gave me such great advice on people to speak to and everything. And I think, like, it all came together in such a beautiful way. But essentially, the documentary featured lots of really amazing figures within the community, whether they're living with HIV, experts in the field, like someone from Terence Higgins, Dr. Kate from Terence Higgins Trust, who sort of spoke about the politics of it, an amazing doctor from the Mortimer Market Clinic who spoke about, like, the science behind PrEP and how it works, the amazing, amazing Ellie, who I'm absolutely in love with, who is this incredible woman who speaks on HIV, is living with HIV and has got a really compelling story to tell. Lots of amazing people, essentially. I got to speak to them, travel around the UK, learn so much about HIV and so much about PrEP. I'm very proud of that documentary. I would hope that people learn something from it.
Exactly. And I think from my work with the Terence Higgins Trust as well, does it surprise you how many people don't know about PrEP and PEP? Every time I meet somebody who doesn't know about it and I educate and inform them, it catches me off guard, like, the lack of knowledge.
Yeah, it's weird because that, like, people, like, if I'm even just talking to someone about, like, the documentary I've done, like, there's always that extra level of explanation that's required, because I'll say what the documentary is called and what it's about, and I'll see the look in their face and I'll be like, you have not got a clue what I'm talking about, don't you not? And it definitely has massively surprised me. And I think, like, people like Ellie are a great example of the importance of why everyone should be understanding and aware of HIV and PrEP, because it really is something that can affect absolutely anyone. I do think the documentary sort of did that job, because it told stories and busted some myths around HIV, that HIV is, like, something that only affects gay men, because we know that that's not the case. And yeah, I don't know, I think it sort of broadens the world of it and it sort of changes some misconceptions.
And we spoke about this a little bit last time, about the kind of recognition you get from your activism. And in particular with this documentary, did you have a lot of people reach out to you afterwards? And was it all positive, or did you get some aggressive feedback? Yeah.
You know what? Like, I feel, I actually feel, like, quite lucky and blessed, because most of the time, like, I would say 95% of the time, like, I only get really, really, really positive, beautiful messages. The only times I ever get negative things are whenever, like, it's another, say, like, a news outlet has covered it, like, then there'll be, like, hateful comments. But to be completely honest, I never read anything that's bad. I only look at the good stuff. So maybe that's, like, my own ego. I'm like, nah, I don't need to see the hateful stuff. I've actually had so many messages from people saying, like, lots, like, honestly, so many people saying that they have started taking PrEP because they watched the documentary. Actually, Russell Tovey, who, like, I've been obsessed with forever, he actually, like, we went for a drink one time and he literally was like, oh yeah, I watched your documentary and I started taking PrEP because of it. And I just thought that was so cool. I was like, I've watched you for years and you're telling me that you've watched my documentary and it's inspired you to start taking PrEP. So wow. That was really cool as well. And then it's not until like you hear stuff like that, or even like Russell T Davies like reached out and said like he loved it, and like really people who I've always admired telling me that they have watched it and it's that sort of like giving them a new perspective or inspired them to start taking PrEP, like that's a very cool thing to be a part of, you know.
It is a beautiful, beautiful documentary. And you've obviously mentioned like how much you enjoyed meeting these people and making it. Are there any plans to make any more documentaries, or what is next for you?
There is a topic which I really, 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 really want to make a documentary about. It's in an area that I've been like getting, like sort of broadening my understanding of in the last couple of months. I'd love to do a documentary about chemsex. I think it's a really sort of complex topic, and I think like it's really misunderstood in a lot of ways and under-researched, and there's some really incredible people who I've been able to meet in the last couple of months who are also doing like really amazing work in that field. I don't know, I think there's a lot to say there, so I'd love to cover that in some way, although these things are so hard, honestly. Like whenever it's something to do with sexual health or sex and gay men, it's just hard because there's still a lot of stigma attached to that, and it's a taboo topic, and chemsex in itself is taboo like anyway for lots of reasons. But if I could do another documentary, it would be on that, so maybe I'll be able to make that happen, maybe.
Yeah, because didn't you recently sit on a panel about chemsex?
Yeah, I met with a bunch of I basically met with Controlling Chemsex, who are this amazing organization who are doing like so much work within this field, which I just didn't even know was happening. Like, for example, like every weekend, like they have like support workers on Grindr, literally with a Controlling Chemsex profile, like being there for people to reach out to them in their time of need to offer support. And like, this is something that like people are doing, and actually they don't even really, like Grindr will shut down the accounts. Like, it's something that they're battling. They almost can't even get the support of the platform. So I think there's so much work to do in raising awareness for organizations like Controlling Chemsex, because they're really amazing grassroots work that they're doing. And also there's a lot of stigma that needs to be broken around chemsex as well, because even like, not that my message would ever be that we should stop chemsex or chemsex is good or bad, but it's about controlling it, and it's about people staying within control and not letting it take over their lives. It's quite a complex topic, but I think it's definitely one I'd like to touch on next.
It absolutely is. It's something that obviously I've talked openly about my past experience with. I interviewed the wonderful Nathaniel J. Hall, who was lucky enough to make a documentary about chemsex for Channel 4, and only scraped the surface. Like I say, it's so in-depth. There's so expansive, like so much to talk about and cover. And it's changing, like the face of HIV. It is something that is evolving, and unfortunately in the wrong way, I feel. I remember when I was first exposed to chemsex and involved in it was in my 30s, and I'm now going out as a public speaker for the Terence Higgins Trust to schools and sixth forms, speaking to 16-year-olds who are accessing chemsex, because the way the route into it tends to be through apps like Grindr, and they meet up with other gay men because it was the same for me, because you just didn't feel part of this community. You wanted to meet other gay men. This is a dark path that you can lead you in the wrong direction. So it's very prominent, and it's worryingly so that the younger generation who are susceptible are now encountering it. So I definitely think there's work to be done in that whole field, and exploration to it. And awareness. So yeah, definitely fight for that.
Yeah, no, 100%. Well, we'll see. Hopefully we can do something around it. I've got a lot of ideas, so yeah.
And just before we let you go, I can't not ask about I Kissed a Boy and the reaction to that show, because it was groundbreaking. It was kind of the first of its kind to feature an all queer, all gay cast of boys. on a primetime BBC entertainment show. How did it feel to be part of that? And how's it been since?
Oh my God, it's absolutely wild. Like, I filmed that like over 2 years ago now, right? It's like such a weird memory in my head, but it's had such a lasting legacy in my life. Like, it really changed my life, honestly, it really did. And like, I never wanted to be on TV. I never like went out with that goal. But whenever this opportunity landed in my lap, it just felt like something I just had to take. And I'm just so glad that I did. I don't know. And I've actually like, I've started to speak to some of the boys who are in season two, and I'm just like so excited for them to go on the same roller coaster that I did. Yeah, it was an amazing experience. I would do it all over again.
Find a new boy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, as always.
You too, Phil. Lots of love, as always.
Welcome back to the HRV Hour. I'm on 97.2 FM and RadioReverb.com. That was amazing.
That was an amazing
both
interview.
Both interviews. Both of them were great, weren't they? I mean,
absolutely.
Jonathan and Simon, they really gelled together.
Yeah, it really came across well together, didn't it?
Yeah, and yeah. I think the interview, the second part of the interview that mm-hmm. Philip did with Harry was amazing.
I know. You've done so well with that one. Yeah.
So you've got a bit of community news. And
we have. I mean, here we go. Thousands more people across England are to benefit from routine HIV testing in A&Es this year, thanks to the extension of major NHS public health initiatives. So basically, there's another 30 A&Es will start testing for infectious diseases in hospital and an emergency department. So that will be HIV and hepatitis. So this is fantastic news. So that means there's going to be altogether about 89 A&Es around the country that will be doing testing. So basically, if you enter A&E, Josh, you would have to say no to a HIV test because they do routine.
Right, sure.
Routine blood test of anyone that goes into A&E.
Yeah.
So, and you know what? The health leaders expect the expanded network in A&E sites will enable up to 1,900 more cases of newly infected HIV or previously diagnosed cases not linked to care. So basically what they're also being able to locate is people that have come out of care.
Right?
Yeah. You know, when we talk about the nearly 5,000 people we know are living with HIV who are not diagnosed and they're not on medication, this is where... You know, we're this finding some in. Of those people and also some people that have opted out of care for various reasons.
Yeah.
For various reasons, maybe some of that through maybe stigma in healthcare. So we're starting to see some of those, which is fantastic news.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so important, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's stigma, isn't it? People don't want to go down that road, but it's place where everyone will go to, isn't it? So it's so important.
And people say, well, why don't we do that in all A&Es? To put that service in place costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we managed to get more money from the government last World AIDS Day, which thank goodness we did, you know. So, you know, bloodborne virus, including 1,000 new diagnoses of HIV, over 4,600 new diagnoses of hepatitis B, and over 1,600 new diagnoses of hepatitis C. So, you know, this is brilliant. It's working.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's working, but it costs money.
And it takes time sometimes,
doesn't
it?
Does it does take time, yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know how long. Yeah. When did opt-out start?
It was a couple of years ago, Josh. It was a couple of years ago.
Was it in Brighton, was it?
Brighton was one of the first ones, in London. Yeah, Brighton, the Sussex County, was one of the first one to go into opt-out tests. And so basically what they're saying, it's high prevalent areas, as much as I hate to say that, but we have to start somewhere.
Yeah, and then
we have to start somewhere.
And I think it's slow,
exactly.
A trickle, isn't it? Yeah.
But no, it's working. It's working.
Yeah, brilliant.
And so we just got to build on it, like you said, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And doing the show helps, doesn't it?
Absolutely. We're letting people know. We're giving people the information they never knew what was going on. Obviously, because, you know, we work within the sector, we can see what's happening first, you know, with me, my work with the Terence Higgins Trust and the work that we do with the NHS, you know, it's great. So we can share that on the radio, which is true. Brilliant. Yeah.
I mean, well, I want to thank, actually, first of all, thanks to any new listeners who's tuning in all around the world. We really appreciate you tuning in to us. You know, it's so important to get out there and just get it out there, really.
Definitely.
Yeah, and so I was thinking maybe you just go through some of the services there in Brighton.
Yes.
So every Friday, between noon and 2:30, there's the Lunch Positive Lunch Club.
Lunch Club.
Yes, which is a great day, actually. Mm-hmm. Great afternoon. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be at the Community Room, Dorset Gardens Methodist Church, mm-hmm. which is in Dorset Gardens in Brighton. Mm-hmm. Go down there. I think it's £1.50 for for lunch donation. Mm-hmm. It's a social kind of gathering.
Can I also say on top of that, it's for anyone living with HIV, Josh?
Yes.
Anyone. Yeah. Doesn't matter what community. Anyone, all communities are represented, please. You know, if you're thinking, well, I don't think it would be for me because, please let us let you know, Lunch Positive has been, does amazing work, and they do amazing work with women as well. So please, you know, do pop along.
And it's just to have that support and also being around people and having a chat, isn't it?
Exactly.
If you want to know more, and there's lots of other services, like they do Wednesday nights, over 50 club, and they do a lot of things in Eastbourne and, different places.
Yes.
So head to their website, lunchpositive.org, or there's a number, actually, a telephone number, 07846 454 584. Mm-hmm. I've written that down. Go to the website.
Yeah, go to the website.
Also, let's go through this. Lawson Unit, which is a medical advice, treatment for HIV, specialist clinics. Mm-hmm. They also deal with diet and welfare advice and drug trials as well, which is a good thing. You can contact them on 01273 664 722. The Sussex Beacon, we talked about the Sussex Beacon, about they're changing a lot, they're closing down their
inpatient unit. Yeah.
Unfortunately, but there's still a lot of things going on.
Still a lot of stuff going on.
So, contact them on 01273 694 222 or visit their website, sussexbeacon.org.uk. Mm-hmm. And Terence Higgins Trust, which is close to our hearts, they're at Ship Street. In Brighton, they're open 10 till 5. Mm-hmm. You can get HIV tests. Mm-hmm.
And they do some of the STI testing as well, Josh, as well.
And counselling.
Counselling.
Positive Voices.
If you want help with, sort of benefits, that we've got a fantastic team in Brighton that will help and support you do those applications and support you through that as well.
So you can, so it's the telephone number is 01273. 764 200 or info.brighton@tht.org.uk. Great. So that's just some of
the flavour of many things that are happening in Brighton.
Yes. Yeah. Now, we're nearly finished, Sue. Yeah. So we're just going to talk about next month's show because it's a special show. Every show's a special show.
Every show's a special show.
It's an extra super special
show. Ooh, it's a Sue show. No, what is it?
Tell our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. We're heading up to and getting ready to celebrate International Women's Day, so we thought we'd do for the very first time a show dedicated to wonderful women living with HIV and also women in HIV medicine. We've got some fantastic interviews with some fantastic people, women living with HIV, telling their story, and I'm really looking forward to this. This is the first time we've done this. We want to celebrate women, especially women living with HIV, through their journeys and resilience and all of those amazing things, and also some of the amazing women that work in HIV medicine here in Brighton.
Yeah, do you know anybody? Do you want to say who it is?
Yvonne Gillies,
yes.
Gillies, actually, I'm going to rephrase that. It's Professor Yvonne Gillies. Amazing lady. We've done an amazing interview with her. Gosh, we could have gone on forever. So we got an amazing show.
Ready, it's leading up to the Beaver Conference, which is
And it's April. Leading up to the Beaver Conference on the 23rd of April.
Oh, I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking, what
in Brighton.
Yeah.
At the, and then you said the London Palladium, it's the Dome. I always get them two mixed up. Because they look similar, don't they? No, I'm joking. They look nothing like each
Brighton
other.
Palladium. No, I shouldn't say that, because it confuses people. It's the Brighton Centre, isn't it?
It's the No, it's not the Brighton Centre.
Confusing everyone.
It's the Dome.
There you go.
It's the dome.
Ignore what I'm saying, people. Just
yes, it's the dome. I know. So, yes.
Yeah, so that's something, I mean, that's amazing. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. So we're going to sort that out. That's it, really. I think we're just coming to the end of the show. What, have you got any plans for the weekend, Sue?
I'm going out discoing with my best friend. We've got an event going on in Worthing. It's for the 70s and 1890s disco. My family think I'm crazy, but I'm going to...
Over
70s. I know. I'm going to attempt to put on my platform boots and see that and have a dance. I'm looking forward to that. Then I'm looking after my grandson on the Saturday because my daughter's moving. So
oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah, what about yourself?
I'm DJing.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, so a little plug. Ooh. I'm DJing at the Bulldog on Saturday between 9 and, well, close. I don't know what time that is, but please come along. It's great. It's like, come along. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't DJed for a while, so I'm looking forward to that.
Lovely.
So thank you so much for listening to the show, and we will see you next time for Independence Women's Day.
International Women's Day. Independence.
I think
we've got our independence now, haven't we? Thank goodness. It would be another story, wouldn't it? Wow.
I think it's time for me to go and lie down.
I know.
A bag of naps. So thank you for listening. And we finish on Donna Summer, Try Me, I Know We Can Make It.
Oh, lovely.
Lovely track, actually. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye soon.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.